I'd like now to welcome Irene Lee. She is the principal investigator for Project GUTS, which stands for Growing Up Thinking Scientifically. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Now, this is a program for young people based in Santa Fe.
That's correct. We started in Santa Fe. Our sponsoring institution is the Santa Fe Institute, and we're funded through a grant from the National Science Foundation Academies for Young Scientists program.
And so how do you go about doing this? How do you teach young people to think scientifically? Like, what do you do when you go into a school? Do you send teachers in?
Well, first of all, we have a summer program, and we recruit throughout the various elementary schools and middle schools to get a cohort of students available who would be interested in summer workshops. And during our summer workshops, we teach three things. We teach basics about complex systems, some fundamental concepts that kids can understand and hopefully be able to identify in their environments. We teach students how to do basic computer programming to make their own computer games that sometimes integrate these complex systems. And we have the students meet scientists, interview them, get to know them and their research, so they have a better feel of what it is to be a scientist.
So what does it actually mean to think scientifically?
Well, for me, we hope the students come away with the ability to look at the world and ask questions and be able to come up with different ways they might go about inquiring more deeply. One of the things we teach is how to model systems on the computer. And through this modeling, they can run what-if scenarios that maybe mimic what they see in the world. And they can change variables. They can have this experimental testbed within the computer. And then later, maybe have some suggestions on how to fix a problem. So for example, some of our students just got done with a pollution unit, and they were looking at pollution in their neighborhoods, in their schools. We went out to Gonzales Middle School, Gonzales Elementary, and actually saw where trash was accumulating and where their trash bins were. And we can model that on the computer and have these agents stand in for the people, and the agents will walk around the environment and pick up trash or drop trash, and you can see over time where trash accumulates based on some simple rules.
Simple rules being like which way the wind blows?
Yes, and also maybe there's some agents that are litterers who go around and just drop candy wrappers every three steps, and then there are others who are just cleaners who pick those up. And given some ratio of cleaners to litterers, we can see over time where trash accumulates and if trash accumulates.
Now, something you said a moment ago, thinking scientifically is about asking questions, but it's about asking specific kinds of questions.
Correct. Questions that we can answer through some data we collect. So the ultimate goal for these students would be to have models where they're generating data, as well as collecting data from the real world about where trash accumulates and comparing the two and seeing why or why not the model reflects what we see in the world.
And that's exactly what they do that's what global warming scientists do.
That's correct.
They make a model for how things are going to be 5 years from now, and then 5 years later they look at it.
Right, but unlike some of those models that try to be predictive, to know exactly what the world's going to look like in 5 years, perhaps. We're looking for trends. We're looking for patterns, not necessarily the same degree of, how should I say, realism as in what you'd want for a global warming model.
So what are some of the kinds of projects besides the trash one that young people are getting engaged in?
There was one early on epidemiology, and it became for many students the study of contagion. And contagion could include how the common flu spreads through the school, or it could be how gossip and rumors spread. They interpreted it many different ways and could customize it to reflect some things they're interested in.
It's very interesting when you compare, for example, in the example that you just gave, you've got something which is about germs, bacteria, viruses, whatever, spreading through a population. That's one thing. And then you have something which is human-created, namely gossip or stories.
Correct.
That seem like they should be very different, but sometimes it turns out that things like that work very similarly.
Correct. And the students are able to see that, that there's some underlying mechanism where there's contact between people, there's a probability that the idea or the disease spreads between people. And then based on who those people know, what their networks of connections are, the spread could be explosive or it could be very limited.
There's also a rich opportunity for metaphor in that.
Yes.
Where, you know, if the young poet scientists are probably going to be thinking about how gossip spreads like a disease.
Right, right. And we encourage that.
Do you?
Uh-huh, yes.
Because it's such a different, I mean, metaphorical and poetic are such a different way of thinking than analytical scientific thinking, or at least it seems so on the surface.
Hmm. Well, I would say that we encourage students to see patterns across many disciplines. One thing we're aiming for is to not teach science as in this is biology and this is chemistry and this is physics, but to see some themes that cross various areas.
What are some of the themes that cross various areas?
One that's being studied at the Institute by Jeff West, who I think you spoke with a couple weeks ago, is scaling phenomena. Across different content areas, whether it be the human body, whether it be cities and streets and arteries. Call them arteries there too, huh?
Yeah.
But there are rules that govern the branching and the flow of whether it be cars or blood through a system.
Or why a mouse's circulatory system is the way it is and an elephant's is the way it is.
Correct. And in cities, the analogy would be why city streets are laid out the way they are and how large cities can grow and what are the economies of scale within a city.
And when a small city grows into a large city, why the downtown streets just don't work very well.
Right. Correct.
We're talking to Irene Lee, who is with Project Guts, Growing Up Thinking Scientifically. So it's a summer program and then an after-school program during the school year?
Correct. We also have this after-school program currently in 8 schools in Santa Fe. Students come to the Project Guts Club 1 day a week after school, and the programs vary between 1.5 hours and 3 hours in the afternoon based on the school day at that particular school. And there are clubs that meet, and they cover units over the course of about 4 meetings. And the units we're doing this year are epidemiology, emergency egress, which is how to escape, basically, emergency evacuation, traffic jams and traffic
emergency
flow.
Evacuation out of buildings, out of cities?
Out of buildings, particularly. One thing we do in Project Guts is we try to ground the science in things kids can observe in their environment, either at their school, their neighborhood, their home. So when we studied emergency egress, we often dealt with the school or the classroom. How
right.
do you get out of classroom, given
right.
there's furniture and whatnot, or a school auditorium or a gymnasium.
Or second floors, of which we don't have that many here in Santa
Correct.
Fe, but second floors of buildings.
That's right. Some of the other topics were traffic jams and traffic flow. Pollution and ecosystems is our final unit, which we're studying now.
And that, when you study pollutions and ecosystems, you're really getting into complex systems.
Correct.
So how do you explain, both to your students and to our listeners right now, the phenomenon of a complex system?
Okay. A complex system is a system made up of many independent parts, and those independent parts have rules and simple behaviors. When you have all these units together, sometimes you have phenomena, you can observe pattern and emergent behavior that would not be predictable just knowing the individual behaviors.
So one example of that would be mob psychology.
Correct.
You've got lots of perfectly nice people, then they come together and they do something they wouldn't have done on their own.
That's right. Another would be termites, maybe building mounds. We often cite birds flocking, how there may not be any one leader in a flock of birds, yet by a number of simple rules it's been shown that you can generate flocks of birds, at least on the computer.
You can generate flocks of birds. But it is very interesting and almost magical when you make this set of rules and then you can generate a visual that looks so much like nature that you're really taken into the illusion.
Yes, and I think that's one of the things that draws students in. They're used to playing video games and so having so much visual input from the media, and when we show them how to create computer models through programming, they're learning these skills, but at the same time, they're viewing themselves as a player in a world that looks much like a three-dimensional video game at times.
There's a lot that's been written about and discussed about how video games and television and so on are not really that great for children in terms of other skills really atrophy. Here you are also teaching them computer programming, computer modeling. How do you see the kids who are in your program right now? I mean, are they behind? Are they ahead of the game because of the video games and media that they've been exposed to?
Well, that's hard to say. I think the world is changing, and the video games are becoming more ubiquitous, as are 3D simulations that scientists use, huge data sets, and gorgeous simulations. And that education is changing, science is changing, so in such a way that I wouldn't say that it is detrimental at this point. Of course, I believe in...
Is it positive in some ways?
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. I think the ability to understand what you're seeing, the ability to program, allows a student to know something from the inside out. So maybe understanding a model from how it was created as well as how it looks. And being able to insert oneself into a simulation as an agent and see the world from that perspective. So say you've made the simulation of a flock of birds, but then you can be one of the birds and experience the rules and the behavior from the bird's point of view. I think that's very powerful.
Now, do you also have young people going out and digging in the dirt and things like that?
Yes, yes. Actually, our next field trip coming up, we're going to the El Dorado Reserve. And as part of our unit on ecosystems, they're going to be out at the preserve and looking for evidence of interaction between animals and animals and nature. So hopefully what they find can later inform some of the models they're building.
We're talking to Irene Lee of Project Guts, Growing Up Thinking Scientifically. There's a lot of freedom and curiosity that young people have. Do you see them sometimes coming up with fresh ideas that the grown-ups around them hadn't thought of?
Yes. There's some very simple models that they can make that have really surprising results. For instance, there was this one model one fellow generated this summer where there were different kinds of Lego men, and one type of Lego man, when they ran into the same kind, its same kind grew larger. When it ran into another kind, it canceled that other kind. And the other breed of...
These are real Lego men, not computer Lego men.
These are computer Lego men. And then there are other kinds of computer Lego men who had other rules, whether they met another Lego man and they grew or shrunk or whatnot. And they just put them in this virtual world and had them run around. And as they met each other, something surprising happened. There would always be one that became huge and dominant, and the others just fell away. So if you looked at the scale of their sizes, you would see this long tail phenomena that we often see in complex systems, where, say, there's one corporation like Microsoft that becomes the big
giant,
and then there are many smaller, and the number of smaller increases.
Very interesting.
Right.
And so this is a computer model, and it's a corporate model. Is it also a natural model? Is it something that you find in animal populations, that particular phenomenon you're talking about?
I'd have to think about that more. There probably are some instances of that. I'm thinking of forests.
Forest seems to be a different kind of example where you've got lots and lots of tall trees together.
Right, but at one point there may have been many saplings of the same size, but ultimately only one could grow to become the large one, where the others...
In a particular area.
Right, correct.
Very interesting. I think another thing that's great about about young people learning science and technologies. For example, when computers were first introduced into the classroom, a lot of kids did everything they could to make them crash. And I mean, I know I've got a close friend in California who lives in the Bay Area, and he's paid good money to try to make computers crash, and he debugs them.
Right.
But these kids just do it out of, I don't know what, some kind of spirit.
Yes, yes. I haven't run across that too much lately.
It might have been the first few generations of because computers have been in the school for quite some time.
Sure.
And they weren't very good. So making them crash wasn't very hard.
Right, right. But then again, it's this mindset of trying to figure out how something works. And if you can't figure it out by taking it apart, maybe you figure it out by breaking it. Right?
Exactly.
So it's another type of learning.
So has this program been in place long enough where you can track young people's career paths and educational paths after they've been in the GUTS program?
Not yet. We are only in our first year. We started working with students just last summer in June. We're coming to the close of our first full program year, and we'll start again this coming June with a second cohort of students. So it's still in a very, very beginning phases. We have had positive results. What students had to say about what they learned during the summer was fantastic, that they learned how to do things they never thought they would be able to do. For them, that was computer programming, making video games. Some of them were talking about new concepts, new ways of looking at the world that they had never thought of before. So we can see growth. We haven't had enough time to do a longitudinal study that will follow them 5 years out and see how many of them were really impacted by this program. But
well,
we hope to do that.
And it's hard to say. I mean, I've mentioned before on this program my fourth grade teacher, Mr. Chappett, who had us doing science and Shakespeare and all these things in the fourth grade. And I don't think there's any way to track that, but it completely transformed my life because we were out digging in the dirt and we were taken to the observatory and observed the rings of Saturn one night and, you know, all these things that you don't usually get to do. And it fires not only your imagination, but really your confidence in your own ability to think and do stuff.
Right, right. And we see that with students' feelings of self-efficacy on the computers. You know, they think they can figure out how to do things once they've had a few successes. The risk-taking they do in their computer games and the programming, you can see that.
Do you think that risk-taking then bleeds over into other areas
of
their lives?
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely.
Very interesting. So you recruit people into this program. What are the criteria that you use to recruit people?
The only criteria is interest. We take students from, you know, those that are highly engaged in science and school and those who aren't. The only criteria is that they want to be there and they're able to be there.
And do you end up getting an equal number of boys and girls?
Well, it was interesting. This summer we had almost an equal number of boys and girls. We had three different sessions. The first was co-ed, the second was all girls, and the third was all boys. And we filled them.
And that was just coincidence?
No, we actually planned it that way.
Oh, okay.
We know we wanted to have an all-girls and a co-ed. The final workshop was initially set out to be, bilingual English-Spanish speakers, and it would be taught in both languages. But I think what happened was out of the population of students who were interested in our program, we had most of the girls attending the second session, which left boys for the third session.
How did you get into all of this work yourself? You studied mathematics and then you went into education.
Correct. And between mathematics and education, I was involved in computer graphics in New York, and then I moved into the computer game industry in California. So my interests have always been visual and visual arts, visualization connected with mathematics. And I made various attempts to try to align those two in a career. There was an interest in architecture early on and design, and then the 3D computer graphics, followed by the gaming. It came together, gosh, must be several years ago now, as an interest in using visualization techniques to help students understand math and science concepts.
And so, are you doing the teaching yourself?
I do some of the teaching myself, and I'll be teaching this evening.
And, oh, let's talk about that. Right. We have, this is all part of the, I almost forgot, this is all part of the Science Cafe series. Tell us about what you'll be doing tonight.
Yes, tonight we will be exploring complex systems through games and computer models. We'll have a short introduction and talk just the way we are about what are complex systems and what are some characteristics of complex systems. And then we'll be engaging the audience in some games and simulations. The first one is a kind of a standing up, moving around the room. The second one will be using Palm Zire, mini handheld computers, to play a game in which we beam information back and forth between each other. And lastly, we will be looking at some simulations of ecosystems together and trying to find these points where we can have a balanced ecosystem that persists over time.
And this is the Santa Fe Science Cafe for Young Thinkers, and it's today from 6 to 8 at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum Education Annex at 123 Grant Avenue in Santa Fe, and it's sponsored by the Santa Fe Alliance for Science and the Santa Fe Institute and the Santa Fe Public Schools, Georgia O'Keeffe Museum, all sorts of folks, and it's free, and youth ages 13 through 19 will get a seating priority. So why 13? I mean, there's a lot of people who get interested in science, and in fact, you know, choose their careers in science at a much younger age than that.
Correct. And the students in Project Guts are generally a few years younger. They're middle school students rather than high school students. At this talk, we're addressing a wide audience. Hopefully, there will be some high school students and maybe some parents and younger students will be there as well. And we can talk about some programs that the Institute offers for those a little bit older.
What kind of programs does the Institute offer?
There's one called the Summer Internship Mentorship Program, and that's a pretty elite program for high school students. Six students are selected to spend the summer with the Institute. We have some instructors who teach them agent-based modeling. They get to attend the first week or two of the Complex Systems Summer School, which SFI holds for graduate students and researchers throughout the world. So it's a very great experience for the young people. And then they choose projects that they want to work on independently with a researcher as a mentor for the next 4 weeks.
And that's something that I would think would really set them on their life path.
Yes, yes. Get exposed to some things that other students may not get until they were seniors at the university, right?
How do you think, I mean, you've been observing this for some time, how do you think science education has changed since you were a young person coming up?
Interesting. I think there's a lot more opportunity to get involved at a younger age. The thought of doing research as a middle school or a high school student wasn't available to me. Even an option. I think we're getting students involved in research at a younger age and in inquiry science, and also looking at how it impacts their communities. How can they give back to their communities through science?
I was wondering also, I loved science when I was a kid and sort of was thinking of going that direction and didn't eventually as a career thing, but I was wondering how what we learned as young people has actually changed and been outdated and it has been swept aside in the last, 20, 30 years. Are they still learning about atoms in the same way? Is the knowledge that people were taught in the 60s and 70s out of date now, or are they still teaching the same kind of thing about what the atom is, what molecules are?
I think in general that change is very slow in public schools and in curriculum. There is a huge opportunity now to update what we learn and how we learn, to integrate the sciences and also integrate technology into how students learn about science. We see at a global level that the science now has three legs rather than two. It used to be experimental science and theoretical science, and now there's this whole new genre or branch having to do with computation and what scientists learn through running models and using computers to analyze huge data sets and mine data and so forth. And we have an opportunity now to show students at a younger age that this might be the future. So it's a time of change. It's exciting.
Irene Lee is the principal investigator for Project GUTS, Growing Up Thinking Scientifically. Irene Lee, thank you so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.